What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Johnson & Johnson's one-dose COVID-19 vaccine could get FDA approval as early as this weekend, but it's been less effective than the other two-dose vaccines on the market. So should you get it?
Experts are saying that everyone who gets the chance should get vaccinated by any one of these vaccines because, you know, even a 67 or 72% reduction in risk of getting COVID is a huge thing.
We'll talk about how J&J's shot will speed up vaccination efforts. And the Dow closes at a new record as Fed Chair Jerome Powell soothes market nerves. Plus, why real estate investors are betting big on Atlantic City. It's Wednesday, February 24th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. In his second day of testimony before Congress, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell made more reassurances that the central bank will keep interest rates at ultra-low levels as planned. That eased fears on Wall Street and pushed stocks higher. The Dow Industrials closed at a record 31,962, up 1.4%. The S&P 500 snapped a five-session losing streak, closing up 1.1%, and the Nasdaq also added 1%. Our markets reporter Amarth Ramkumar has more.
Powell's comments really eased some fears that the Fed might be forced to start thinking about raising rates down the line earlier than some investors had expected. In recent days, government bond yields have shot higher, and investors are trying to gauge how quickly an economic reopening might boost economic growth and GDP. That could lead the Federal Reserve and other central banks around the world to again raise rates more quickly than anticipated. We're not saying like tomorrow or this year, but some investors are debating whether it could be 2022 or 2023, for example. So any signs really that the Fed and other central banks might raise rates earlier could send markets into a tailspin. That's why we've seen a lot of volatility over the last few days.
Amarth says investors are also keeping a close eye on rising bond yields.
Higher yields make stocks less attractive, they signal higher borrowing costs for companies, and they again make the growth by large tech companies like Apple, Amazon, etc. seem a bit less attractive. On the other hand, the 10-year Treasury yield is only at about 1.4%, so that's still very low and not at levels that a lot of investors think will cause problems for the stock market.
Senate confirmation votes on Neera Tanden, President Biden's pick to lead the Office of Management and Budget, have been delayed as Democrats try to find at least one Republican to support her nomination. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia said he plans to vote no. She's been in the hot seat because of past statements and social media posts criticizing Republicans and liberal Democrats. But the White House has defended Tanden's credentials, and she's apologized for those past comments at her confirmation hearings earlier this month, saying she would be nonpartisan if confirmed. Partners at the consulting firm McKinsey have voted out Kevin Snieder as its global managing partner amid fallout from a series of crises during his tenure, according to people familiar with the matter. The firm has been criticized for its work with foreign governments, including Saudi Arabia. And this month, McKinsey reached a $573 million settlement with states over its role in advising OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma and other drug makers to aggressively market opioid painkillers. Snieder criticized the firm's behavior in a letter to employees and made changes that set new standards for clients, moves that were met with resistance, according to people familiar with the matter. Deputy Management Bureau Chief Vanessa Furmans has been following the story.
I think this really represents an inflection point for McKinsey. The company has grown to a point where there is a debate within the firm about how to expand further and what criteria does the company use, what sort of processes does it use to accept new business. In the past, it's a company that's been really largely run and big decisions have been decided by individuals, individuals who are really the best in their field. And Mr. Snieder is somebody who came into leadership introducing some changes to those processes, more sort of systematic ways of growing, and that was met with resistance.
Snieder is the first McKinsey leader in decades not to win a second term. And just this afternoon, drug maker Moderna said its vaccine targeting a COVID-19 variant is ready for human testing. The strain seen in South Africa showed resistance to its original shot. Testing could start within weeks. Coming up after the break, we'll talk more about how Johnson & Johnson's single-shot vaccine could speed up broad immunization efforts, if people are willing to take it.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The Food and Drug Administration has finished its study of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine and says it's safe and effective in preventing moderate to severe cases of the disease. That paves the way for a third vaccine approval in the U.S. as early as this weekend. J&J's vaccine has some advantages over the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines already being given. It's the first to be administered in just one shot, and it doesn't have to be stored at ultra-low temperatures. Experts say that will speed up and broaden vaccination efforts across the nation. But there are some questions. J&J's vaccine is just 66.1% effective compared to Moderna and Pfizer, which are 94.1% and 95% effective, respectively. So how much does that matter? Joining me now is Wall Street Journal medicine and FDA reporter Tom Burton. Hi, Tom. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Anne-Marie. My pleasure.
So, Tom, Johnson & Johnson's vaccine is a one-dose shot as opposed to the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, which are both two doses. It's also less effective than the other two. But can you tell us more about what experts are saying about this vaccine candidate as compared to the others that are already in distribution?
Well, like all three of them, there are lots of numbers, and I could bore you to tears with all of those numbers. But the bottom line, I think, is that since we as a country are still way short of the numbers of vaccines that we need, people are really not going to be able to pick and choose between them. There are definite advantages of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, even though, as you say, its overall effectiveness is not as good. However, it does appear to stop, to a great degree, the phenomenon of transmission to people who then don't have symptoms. And that kind of transmissibility has been really important in spreading the virus. So to the degree that this vaccine or any vaccine can prevent those cases, that's a great thing.
So you mentioned that people aren't really going to be able to pick and choose here. I imagine that some people might be thinking of holding out until they can get the vaccines that have proven more effective. What else do experts say about that? And will consumers have that choice?
Most people around the United States do not have that choice. For example, I live in Maryland, and we're basically getting the Moderna vaccine right now. And it won't be for a long time that there's enough supply to meet the demand. But among other things, many experts are saying that everyone who gets the chance should get vaccinated by any one of these vaccines because, you know, even a 67 or 72% reduction in risk of getting COVID is a huge thing. And, you know, we shouldn't be spoiled by the fact that the first two vaccines had tremendous efficacy. This one has really pretty darn good efficacy. And as I say, it has these other advantages. So again, I think, you know, people ought to be getting the vaccine. I know Johnson & Johnson is experimenting with the possibility of giving people a second vaccine, just as Pfizer and Moderna have been doing. So it may very well be that once a second vaccine from Johnson & Johnson is out and gets approved, that its efficacy may be on par with the others, maybe even higher.
But does that lower efficacy rate mean it could take longer for the U.S. to reach herd immunity and that we might have to practice other mitigation measures like social distancing and mask wearing for a longer period of time?
Well, I think we're going to be exercising social distancing and mask wearing for a long time regardless. I mean, even vaccines that are the best ones we have right now, they're 95% effective. They're not 100% effective. So reaching herd immunity really has more to do with persuading the people who just can't get around to it or are opposed to vaccines or afraid of them, and explaining to them that there really is nothing to be afraid of. What there is something to be afraid of is the coronavirus itself.
At the same time, Tom, we're also getting data that just a single dose of some of those other two-dose vaccines are proving pretty effective on their own. How does that change the picture, especially when we consider the current efficacy rate of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine?
The one study that I'm familiar with that you're referring to was of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. It was one study, and scientists will tell you not to base your decision-making and lives on one study, to wait for more. If that proves out in multiple studies, and if the FDA and other knowledgeable authorities say that, oh yes, it would be fine to get by with one vaccine, I would change my mind. But at this point, I'd say the best advice we have, certainly in this country, is to believe what the FDA has said, which is that both of those first two shots need a second shot, a kind of booster shot. And so that's really the best advice that I would give people at this point.
Now, we are looking at potential approval of a third vaccine here in the U.S. as early as this weekend. Overall, how would that contribute to U.S. vaccination efforts? How many more doses could Johnson & Johnson provide, and how quickly?
It's going to help. It's not going to be as dramatic as people in the government once thought. But our best knowledge at this point is that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine over the month of March should add roughly 20% to our overall supply of vaccines. That's a good thing. And I believe the number is by June that they're going to be supplying enough to increase the total supply by, I believe it was about 30%. I would have to check the precise number, but in that range. So the main thing that can happen is that this could speed the availability of any vaccine to reach everyone in the United States, which now has been estimated at about July. It might move it up to May or June. And there are other vaccines on the horizon, one from AstraZeneca, another from Novavax. And all of those things are positive. They will increase the overall supply. And if they work out and are anywhere nearly as effective as the ones we have right now, that could really speed up getting the entire nation vaccinated, which would be the best thing we could do for public health for everybody.
Wall Street Journal reporter Tom Burton. Tom, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And finally, before Atlantic City was a mecca for nightclubs and casinos, it was a seaside vacation destination. Now, the city is trying to get back to those roots, and not just for tourists. Buyers looking for family-friendly beach communities to work from home have been flocking to Atlantic City during the pandemic. They drove home prices up 30% in the fourth quarter of 2020 compared to a year earlier. It makes Atlantic City one of the country's biggest housing market winners. While experts say the efforts to bring in new businesses have helped, our housing reporter Will Parker says the city is not giving up on gambling completely.
It still brings in a tremendous amount of revenue and tourism and things that come along with it. But there's been a sense there for a long time that the economy should diversify away from gambling to some extent. And I think a lot of the people who live there and in that area are happy to see that change continue. And that includes a lot of the sort of development you're seeing now, which is based around other reasons to be there apart from, you know, pulling slots.
And it isn't helping New Jersey hit the jackpot. The state's gambling revenue fell 17% in 2020. And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.